Crouch. Bind. Set.
Joe presents The House of Rugby, Season 3.
Hello and welcome to House of Rugby, brought to you by Joe. Happy New Year, or since we're all pissed off already, let's just say New Year. Joining me today, a couple of current rugby players. It is worth reiterating the fact that they are current rugby players. We have Jamie George, who at the moment only seems to turn up when there's an international cap on offer, and Sean O'Brien, who is desperate to play any game of rugby, but thanks to COVID, he's been all dressed up with nowhere to go. Gents, how are you both?
Great, Lee, thanks. How are you?
I'm all right after that introduction. Thanks, Lee. Seems like a bit of a stitch up. There's no rugby to play. What are you talking about?
Well, you only play if you get your 22k per game, isn't it, with England? Or no, it's been slashed, has it, by a couple
right,
of grand.
We've been on here for less than a minute. Less than a minute. Is this how it's going to go for the next hour?
Let's bring it back with some niceties. Jamie, the last time you were on, you were just about to get married. How did the wedding go? How is married life?
Yeah, I mean, she said yes. I'm a married good. Man. Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, life's pretty much the same, to be honest. Like, it's not too much going down, but no, it was great. Wedding went really well. 15 people and stuff like that, but we gave it a good crack. Elliot Daly, MVP.
I saw that of all the sort of the wedding pictures that went up, I think one of the first ones that went up was basically Elliot Daly's backside about to jump into a lake.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, we thought, so we had quite a big night on the Friday night. And then, because we sort of had 2 days of it and he jumped into the lake. We thought it would get rid of the dust, the old cobwebs off. So that was a bit of open water swimming. Never hurt anyone.
I bet you his missus didn't like that. She's very controlling, isn't she?
That's ridiculous. No, she's not. What a horrible thing to say.
Remember, I remember on the Lions, I was talking to her about the dog. And I said,
For clarity, you said that you would kill her dog. So I think
I said, I would put manners on the dog. I said, and she kind of took offense to it anyway. She probably misunderstood me or something.
Yeah. Well, I think to this day, she still thinks you were saying that you'd kill her dog, which I think anyone would take offense to.
Absolutely. I take offense to that myself, but that was not the case.
Well, I'm glad we've cleared it up in public. So that's going to go down well. Sean, you've had a frustrating last couple of weeks because came back from injury, couple of matches on the cards for London Irish. COVID has been throughout your squad and both matches off. So how have you been bouncing off the walls?
Yeah, it has been a frustrating 2 weeks for everyone involved at the club. You know, we had a few cases of COVID, obviously, and the priority was to make sure that those people were okay and didn't get hit too hard by it. But, you know, it's a tough situation, I think, for London clubs. I think us and Quinns, you know, we're in the middle of the whole lot of it, really, and it's hard to escape it. You go for a walk with the dog, you could get it. You go down to the takeaway coffee shop, you could get it. It has been frustrating. So we're really looking forward to getting back going this week now again. Hopefully we play at the weekend. So I suppose we know what lockdown life is like now. We know how to deal with it probably from the last year or so now, nearly at this stage. And we got some work done anyway in our own time and made sure we hit the ground running again today in training. So it wasn't all bad, in fairness. Got to spend some more time with the doggy and do a bit of training. So he was happy I was here.
Put some manners on your dog. Yeah. In terms of the match, it is going to be London Irish Quinns. You just mentioned both clubs there. You actually mentioned that match right back in episode one to Adam Jones. And he was like, why have you got that one marked in your diary? So we're going to treat it as Sean against Adam if it does happen. Are we expecting it to happen?
Yeah, we are. As far as we're aware anyway, it's full steam ahead for the weekend. Hopefully nothing between then and now upsets that fixture. And everyone will be looking forward to playing rugby again. They had a game called off last weekend too. So I'm sure they're chomping at the bit as we are. So it'll be an interesting affair.
And for everyone who's been stuck at home reading newspapers over the last couple of weeks, it seems that the only thing to be done is to make lists of who the Lions team will be. So, Jamie, according to every list that's out there, have you gone and picked up your stash of Lions kit so far? Because you're in every single list.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not reading any of that. Any of that at the minute. Thank you.
That's absolute lies.
Why is it lies?
You're definitely. You know that you're one of the best hookers that probably will end up going on it, bar you're injured or something. But
yeah, you never know what can happen, Shawnee.
You never know what can happen.
You never know, mate.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see.
Do players take notice of these lists? Does it actually matter?
Promise you, I will actually. I don't read that stuff, but I think a lot of people do. Like, you hear a lot of whispers about it, like around the club, especially it's usually from guys who aren't involved in it. So you do generally hear. Yeah. There's always whispers. So it's the same every year. Like as soon as the Lions year comes around, everyone is talking about it the whole time. If you have a bad day at training, you're not going to get on the Lions tour if you train like that. If you've had a good day, you know, there's just constantly everyone's talking about it the whole time. So
he has the earphones on already. Look,
they're not the ones we got from the tour. Thank you very much. they're different ones. But.
Yeah, sure.
We are going to talk about the Lions a little bit more later on, but we've got a lot of topics to cover. Now, you might remember from our last House of Rugby that we talked about an academic paper that had been published. A group of academics, of doctors, were saying that they didn't think that tackling should be in kids rugby. Sean dismissed that out of hand, and we have one of those academics coming up on the programme to debate it out with Sean, so we'll look forward to that. And Jamie's going to tell us what's happening at Saracens, which might not be the longest part of the programme, but let's move on to the Lions, because we've all been looking forward to 2021. It's a Lions year, but obviously with everything going on in the world, there has to be some question marks on whether the Lions tour will actually happen to South Africa. On Monday, the Lions released this statement. I'm just going to read you a bit of this. Given the uncertainty that continues to be caused by the coronavirus pandemic, both in South Africa as well as the UK and Ireland, we are very aware of the need to make a timely decision on the best way forward, not least so that we can provide clarity to supporters booked to travel to South Africa next summer or those thinking of making the trip. Now, they've basically said that they're looking at every alternative, no matter where that tour might happen or how it might happen. At the moment, though, Sean, it couldn't happen in the guise that we know a Lions tour, though, could it?
No, I don't think it can happen in the current situation over there anyway. I don't believe it'd be a Lions tour without the fans either. That's half the crack. Like, honestly, Australia, New Zealand, and from what the boys told me from being in South Africa the last time, it's meant to be even more outrageous out there. So I'd love to actually be on it. I'd love to be out in South Africa in the middle of that. I'd be going absolutely cracked as a crows. But it's
there's a chance, isn't there? You'd be all right.
There absolutely is, Jamie. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. There is a chance. Yeah. But no, without the fans, it just wouldn't be a Lions tour. So I don't see the point in having it if it's not viable to have it out in South Africa. And I think it'd be a shame to have it somewhere else other than there, considering, you know, the history of it and, you know, what it means to South African people as well. So, yeah, it's all up in the air, and it's going to be a strange time, I think, for the powers to be to make a decision on it.
Jamie, can you distance yourself as a current player, and as we've talked about, a player who's, you know, barring injury, highly likely to be on this tour? Can you distance yourself and sit back from it, or do you just have to see what's announced in February? I think they're talking about now.
Go on, Sean, have your piece so I can hear. Well,
he has to get a few kilos of body weight off him first, right, and start doing a bit of hard training again, because he's been sitting up eating.
I'm expecting to see at any moment Jamie George has left the meeting.
Yeah, he's been sitting up having Nando's for the last couple of months with his arms folded, counting cash from the England games.
Anyway,
can we just mute
Sean? it's getting out of hand. Right. Anyway, back to the business. Thank you. I can't really, like, it's hard to, like, Sean will testify for this. Like, whenever your name's in the hat, and whenever it is a Lions year, you always wanting to know what's going on, and especially with all the speculation about what's happening now, I just think, you know, that it is in the front of your mind, really. And yeah, I'm sort of torn between, you know, what hearing about, you know, I'm very much with Sean in terms of thinking that it'd be such a shame to take it away from South Africa. I think it definitely should be there, but at the same time, scheduling wise, I just don't know how else they're going to fit it in than looking elsewhere. So I'm glad I'm not sat on that Lions board at the minute, or in the South African rugby board, because it's going to be a few headaches over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's made huge news in the UK and in Ireland for obvious reasons. But I'm delighted to have Elma Smit, sports broadcaster, journalist from South Africa. And Elma, has it been discussed a lot already where you are?
Hi, guys. Yes, thanks for inviting me to join this conversation. Of course, this is a very hot topic down here, not only because we'd love to have you all come spend your pounds. Please do bring your foreign currency along. It's also, of course, after all the hard work the Springboks put in to win the Rugby World Cup, a long-awaited tour. This is a very meaty fixture. And remember, for South African rugby fans, the last time they saw the Springboks in action was back at Yokohama Stadium at the Rugby World Cup final. No Springbok rugby during 2020, which means that 2021 is important. And, you know, I'm sure for the players, you know, trying to put yourself in their position, not having had an entire year of test rugby, this is a very big tour. People are talking about it. The prospect of moving it up north, obviously, isn't exactly winning hearts. But I think that if you're pragmatic, you realize that if we can't host it the way that a Lions tour should be hosted, and the postponement looks so unlikely to be possible, then, you know, you are living through what we are living through at the moment. It's going to require some sacrifices.
So would a Northern Hemisphere Lions tour, or a Lions tour which basically has, you know, UK and Irish bases, is that something you think that South Africa, the Springboks, would accept?
I'm sure it's not, you know, it's not something that anyone wants to have happen. But we're not in the amateur era anymore, and it's not only about what would make a great tour, and it's not only about what would be the most fun for the fans, or even, you know, to be very honest, about what the players would want the most. And there's also, of course, the very important commercial concern here. And so if you are having to choose between it being cancelled and it being moved geographically, I don't think that South African rugby is cash flush enough. I mean, show me a union that is, to say no thank you to that kind of cash injection that they would still stand to benefit financially from this tournament taking place in the UK. And of course, I mean, there are so many surfers in the UK. I'm sure they'd love the opportunity to go dig out their Springbok jerseys and support.
But Sean, the whole point is that it's a sort of a band of brothers from different countries who are going on tour to your sort of hostile nations, and that is a Lions tour, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think that's what makes the tour. I think if you asked any player, you know, from England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, you know, would they get as excited going to England or somewhere else to play the Springboks? They'd say no. You know what I mean? You're an hour from home. It's not really a tour, is it? And you can't.
I don't think they'd say no, mate. Like,
but
they would say
but
no.
You'd obviously enjoy it, but we actually would like to go away on a tour and have the same crack you'd have on a New Zealand or Australian tour.
But if it's the only option, Sean, is it better than nothing?
Yeah, if it's the only option, yes, of course. Like, you want to represent the Lions and you want to play the world champions, wherever that is. But my point is, it's just not going to be the same in a player's point of view or from a fan's point of view. And that's what makes the Lions special. That tour and mentality, the fun of it all, embracing the people, getting slagged like in a different environment. And I think you know, I think it would be, it'd be tough on the Lions players as well, having it in at home, like, as such, in England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, wherever. Like, I think the media, I don't think lads could relax and enjoy it as much as they would in South Africa. Put it to you that way.
And look, South African players don't want to play a Lions tour away from home. That's, you know, that's what you want. You want to be able to play those matches here in front of your home crowd. And so that's why I'm saying I don't think anyone wants this. But if it's a choice between not having a tour at all, if a postponement isn't possible, if it's between cancellation and moving it, then, you know, I think that that'll be an outcome that most people would probably accept.
And Jamie, it's not just about the matches, although there is a huge schedule in the Lions now, but it's everything else that goes with it, isn't it? Because you would be doing what, sort of going to community projects or going to see schools and everything that goes with that, and then all the travelling fans. It seems a real tough one, but the Lions is more than rugby.
It definitely is. Like, I think that's something that, especially in South Africa, you see how much rugby means to the people there. I mean, Elmer, you know, obviously know a lot more than I do, but, you know, having played there before, you know, you see how much it means to the community, and then the impact that a touring party can have on the community. We did a little bit there when we were with England. And like you said, you know, it has a huge impact on the country as a whole. And in a time where it's been so tough for over a year now, I think it's something that would be a hugely positive light. But, you know, as we said, whether that can be done or not is something that needs to be worked out. But it'll be incredibly disappointing if we can't get over there.
Elmer, we've seen the Olympics, the Paralympics being put back a year. Is that an option, do you know?
Look, I'm sure that from a South African perspective, the organisers will do everything in their power to keep it here. Mainly because, you know, we all love the whole touring aspect of it, but also, of course, as Jamie mentions, and there's a lot of stuff that goes along with the Lions tour. And remember, the tourism sector in South Africa has been hit incredibly hard. These are often people who are most vulnerable, who are breadwinners for, you know, entire extended families. And so from an organizer's perspective, they will definitely do their utmost to ensure that, you know, that we can stage something here. But I mean, if all the home nations have test series locked in and confirmed for, you know, a year on, I don't know enough about those conversations, but I would guess that they're not exactly flexible. And then I have heard rumors about movement out to October. But that would also be a headache in terms of player availability. I mean, that would just require such a rejig of so many moving parts. And as we've seen with the Olympic Games, when you postpone an event of that scale, it's still not sure that it's actually going to go ahead. So what's to say? I mean, this is a horrible thought, but what's to say that 2022 is better? You know, we've had a new variant come out in South Africa. We initially were told that because we have a Johnson & Johnson manufacturing plant in Port Elizabeth, we'd be able to manufacture vaccines and see early rollout in South Africa. That hasn't actually come through at this stage. We're hoping to see some sort of vaccine rollout in the second quarter of the year only. All of the most optimistic timeframes have had to be pushed back and pushed back and pushed back on this pandemic. Which is why if you start postponing, you do run the risk of kind of that becoming a slippery slope.
Sean, what do you think is the right thing to do at this stage? I mean, they've got to make a decision. That this is a problem as well. It, you know, it seems like it's quite far away, but it's not really when you have fans and players trying to get their schedules in. A decision, I think they're saying, has been brought forward from March to February.
Yeah, I think just what Elma said there now about the vaccines, that was going to be one of my questions, actually. And if that's not happening until the second quarter of the year, like, that's a major implication on the tour. Even if there was no crowds, obviously, and the tour went ahead over there, it'd still be high risk, obviously. And, you know, I suppose from mine and Jamie's point of view, we haven't heard anything even over this side yet about the professional game getting vaccines, or I certainly haven't. I mean, maybe Saracens are paying someone to do it. I'm not sure though. We'll ask Jamie about that later on the show maybe. But like, it is something that needs to be rolled out pretty quickly if these things are going to go ahead, or even be in the minds or of the powers to be to run with. And at the minute, for me, I can't see it going ahead. And I think just with the way the world is at the minute and how much of a high risk this, COVID is, it's too risky to put people's lives on the line.
I think the one thing that I need to clarify, we actually spoke about this over dinner, is that in South Africa at this stage, we're at a case rate of about 12, 13,000 a day, which is lower than the UK. But what people don't realize who don't live here is that you can't test at home. And a test costs 850 rand, that's 42 pounds. That is sometimes half of what some people earn in a month. Government testing, the free tests, often take up to 2 weeks to send you results. And so contact tracing is virtually pointless in a society such as ours. And the actual positive number of cases we have are only the ones being tested. We have the highest tested positive test numbers on the continent, but mainly because we test. I mean, in Tanzania, they don't have COVID. They don't test for it. The government has said it doesn't exist there. And so you also need to contend with the reality that the numbers you see at this stage aren't necessarily 100% the numbers that you might find if everyone did have access to testing.
I have a feeling that between Sean O'Brien and Elma's stats, this is becoming one of the most depressing nights of Jamie George's life. So I'm apologising to Jamie at this stage as well, because at the moment, it's not all sounding good. Elma, thank you very much for taking the time to join us. I really appreciate your insight. And do join us again, maybe on a more positive topic.
Hopefully we have some good news at some point to discuss from this side.
Well, great to hear the thoughts of Elma and get the South African perspective on this. But we've actually got a situation closer to home with a lot of matches being cancelled. And Sean, you've been in the receiving end of some of this. So what is the atmosphere like within London Irish just now?
Yeah, it's great this week because we're back in the facility and we're back up and running again. And looking forward to the weekend, but it's been a frustrating few weeks for the whole club and everyone associated with it, having two games cancelled. And I suppose the other thing then is the way the points go. And I suppose 2 points is better than nothing. But on the other hand, there were two games that we would have been going after and trying to win. So, but look at. It's the world we live in at the minute, and we're kind of a little bit of a disadvantage, I think, the London clubs, because we're in the middle of this pandemic and it's hard to escape it with just the amount of people around the place. But back in this week and ready to rock and looking forward to getting back playing rugby again.
Jamie, looking at it from the outside of the Prem this year, do you see a situation where a club could get relegated if it comes to this, because of these points lost because of COVID matches being cancelled?
It is I don't think they'll let it happen, but it is looking that way. Like, it, it's such a difficult time. I wondered whether there should have been a break maybe whilst they're sorting out what lockdown we were going into and, maybe pause it for 2 weeks. I know there's a tight on the schedule. But, for London Irish to have had two games where they're not allowed to, they've not been able to play, if that then costs them at the end of the season, that's just not the way that it should be. So, I don't know. I guess my opinion of it would have been that, maybe put a pause on it for a couple of weeks, let things settle down and then make up those games midweek or, whenever we can.
And then, Sean, you get the constant conversation of ring fencing, but from a very different perspective coming up this year. Do you think that would be a good idea?
I don't know whether it's the fairest thing to do either, because you have teams in the Championship that want to come back up to Premiership and fight for that, and it's the right to fight for it. I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair either. And I think everything this year is just what's gone on the last year has been like is going to have major consequences on what happens, obviously, within this season. And but I certainly wouldn't agree with it, me personally. I think everyone should be given the right to have a fair crack at getting promoted, or and on the other end of the spectrum, then if you're not playing well enough, you get relegated. So it's something I wouldn't be for.
Just for clarity, like someone needs to come up this year. Just
glad you cleared that up.
I mean, it's difficult. We don't know what's happening with the championship season yet. As far as we know, it's going ahead. But, you know, in terms of ring fencing, if nothing were to happen, would you bring Sarries up? Ealing will kick off about that. I'm sure another couple of clubs might do as well. Can you have 13 teams in that competition? I don't think it would work. You know, would you have a bye week? All things that you need to sort of weigh up. Do you make it a 14-team competition, make the season longer? There are well-being issues with that. So, hugely challenging. But, you know, I think the way that things are going, hopefully that we sort of get less games cancelled, the championship up and running, and like Shawnee said, we can have a fair contest.
So that's the Premiership, but we know that there's been financial pressures in some of the Pro 14 nations as well. Even before COVID came in, we heard a lot from some of the Welsh sides. Sean, there was a report that came out of Ireland, I think it was the beginning of 2020, with two out of the four Irish provinces in financial difficulties, and Scotland isn't exactly flush when it comes to cash as well. So these things are only going to be exacerbated. These problems are only going to be exacerbated with COVID going forward. Do you think we're going to get a situation where, you know, we will see a lot of different players leaving, as we are from Scotland, this exodus that might happen from Ireland and Wales?
Yeah, I do, to be honest. I think the unions, it might be their only way out by the time this is all finished and passed. Obviously, not having fans in the stadium is costing clubs a lot of money. And revenue and cash flow, and the unions can't afford to you know, fill the void. So when it comes to players' wages then, etc., and international contracted players, it's going to be very hard to pay them what they're probably worth, their value is. And if you're not getting your value as a player, you need to go and find it somewhere else. So I do think you will see some players leaving between Ireland, Wales, Scotland. I think, I think some of the unions might be actually on board with people going, because they'll save money and they'll have no expense and still be able to use their players. But there is that rule in Ireland, I suppose, speaking from my own experience, that once you play outside of Ireland, it's not a written rule, but once you play outside of Ireland, you can't play for the national team. So there's a lot of interesting pieces will come out if that does happen to some of the frontline players for Ireland at the minute that are up on contracts. So it's going to be an interesting month or two ahead, because they're usually done and dusted with in Ireland November kind of time, start November, probably by the end of November they're all completed. And they have come out and said that they've put off that for a couple of months. So in come the cavalry then to try and sweep some of these boys off their feet. And, it's a short career we have as rugby players, and people need to make the most of it. And, Jamie will testify to that.
Right. I've had enough of it. But what I will say on that is, I know that, like, I just don't know whether that there will be that many other clubs in Europe that are going to have the funds to do it. Everyone's in such a bad way with no fans in the stands. I think financially, most clubs are struggling. So I wonder whether, you know, you say there's going to be a big exodus. How many frontline players can be taken on a huge wage in England or in France? You know, I don't know whether there's going to be a budget for it.
I don't think it'll be a big exodus, but I do think you might have a couple of the bigger
the highest paid players.
But
in itself, you know, the higher paid players, there's less, there won't be any budget for them. So the difference in cost might be even worse.
Yeah, but you look like, I'm going to say, take someone like Tadhg Furlong, for instance, specialist positions.
Anyone would sign him.
Yeah, and they would actually free up to get rid of other players to try and get someone like that, true. Because it's a specialist player. Yeah. So him, like, you look at Itoje, James Ryan, these boys who are like special players. So that's, I don't think there'll be a massive amount of players, but I think some of the big dogs, as we call them, will be, you know, getting big offers from elsewhere because they're in such a privileged position, and you know, that's their value. If someone's willing to offer them twice what they're worth at home, that's their value at the time. So it's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, it's going to be hugely interesting to see how the next few months plays out. Okay, well, the last time we had House of Rugby, you might remember that we were discussing a paper that had been published from academics and doctors about their thoughts that tackling in children's rugby, kids' rugby, should be banned. Now, Sean O'Brien was very dismissive of this, but I'm delighted to say that we have one of those academics, Dr. Adam White, joining us to discuss this. Thanks very much for coming on the programme.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me. And it's great to see you, Sean. I really enjoyed the last podcast, so it's, I'm looking forward to getting into
it. I can't wait for this.
This is a friendly banter now, Adam, before he gets stuck into me, is it?
I was going to say something about joining the lion's den, or, you know, being the vet that's trying to protect the cub, but I avoided that.
Just tell us about the paper that you and some of your contemporaries published, the thinking behind it and how it's been received.
Yeah, so whilst there's lots of discussion around concussions and the elite game, and, you know, obviously we've got some extremely esteemed colleagues here that will talk about their concussions, I'm sure. I'm more concerned about children in schools and, you know, the concussions that are being suffered on every school field every week and bits like that. Some of the research that we've looked at has found that 76% of boys are compelled by their school, i.e. required or forced, or whatever word you want to use for it, to participate in contact rugby. But only 2.2% of people participate in contact rugby when they leave school after 16. So there's a huge proportion of kids being made to do something that they will never have to do in their lives, which has a greater risk of injury. It's the highest risk injury activity in schools. And just for some context, we know that the youth game, the school game, has a much higher risk of injury and concussion than the adult community game. And that includes National One. This data right the way from National One until level 9, 10, which is, you know, your local club, basically. And that's really worrying. We're concerned about that. So all we're really asking is that children are not forced to do it. They have choice. And if they want to engage in contact rugby, I think contact rugby is great. I played the sport. I work for the RFU. Then they just go to their local community club or play in an after-school team, which they volunteer and opt to do, rather than being forced in PE lessons to do tackling. So that's it, really, in a nutshell.
Are these, a question for Adam, really, is are these rugby-playing schools that are forcing these kids to play?
So it's a mix. We studied state schools particularly. We know that numbers are higher in independent schools. So, it'll be a mix of rugby-playing, non-rugby-playing schools. We did it across the country. Mm. So we hope that it's about 9% of the whole population of secondary school kids across the country. So hundreds of thousands of young people we've surveyed, really. And, so it's slightly worrying in our eyes.
Because I think, like, from my own point of view, or my opinion on it then is, like, from that side of things, what are parents doing about it? What are parents doing about a kid that isn't in a rugby-playing school, for instance? If you're going to a rugby-playing school, I think it might be a bit different because your parents have enrolled you there with the potential maybe of, you know, getting on well and playing for England down the line. You know the way parents are so mad about all this stuff. But in a normal school, why aren't parents stepping in to deal with that type of thing? Because I agree with you in terms of someone who doesn't want to play rugby shouldn't be forced to play rugby. And then as a consequence, maybe get hurt. So I agree with you on that side of things. The thing that if it's a compulsory thing in the school, what I do think that needs to be done is, again, and I revert back to the same point I had in the last podcast, was the coaching element of it. If it is a compulsory sport in the school and always has been, these coaches and PE teachers, etc. PE teachers are one thing, but you need a rugby-specific coach to coach rugby, in my opinion, because it is a contact game.
I actually think, and part of the reason why I reached out is I don't think we will disagree on most of this, if I'm honest, and it's quite exciting to come on. And the way that we've structured this is we just don't think kids that don't want to participate in contact rugby should be made to do so. So the easiest kind of pragmatic way of doing that is take contact out of PE and allow them to do after-school clubs, allow them to do community clubs, play in their academies, and those that want to participate and need to learn tackling can do that. But the second point you raised there around coaching qualifications, I feel like I've been banging my head against a wall for years on this. And I actually wrote to the Rugby Football Union back in 2016 and England Rugby Football Schools Union, which is responsible for schools rugby, saying that we should make coaching qualifications mandatory for teachers so that they can prove that they've got some experience and expertise in coaching contact and tackling. And the RFU will say no, they won't make it a mandatory requirement. They don't make it mandatory that people have head case concussion training to supervise kids in schools. And, I'm sure that you both agree, Jamie and Sean, that that's just wrong.
Yeah, I do. I do. I agree with you on that in terms of, because again, it goes back to that point of if you're forcing someone to do something in the school environment, i.e. play rugby, that they don't want to do. And secondly, then you've no one coaching them how to play rugby or to tackle or to be in a safe environment. You're behind the ball straight away. So like something has to be done. I think rather than what I'm trying to say is rather than maybe banning tackling in schools, is the curriculum probably needs to change in terms of what way it's set out, who's in charge of it, who oversees this. And lastly, on your point, is that nobody who doesn't want to play a rugby is forced to play a rugby or a contact sport in that environment, because that is someone that could potentially get hurt and have a problem down the line.
But Adam, as so often happens, it takes a sort of bad news story or a lot of publicity because of a bad news story for this to get into the psyche of the correct people. Do you think that all the attention around dementia and head injuries that is in the news at the moment, not just in rugby, in football, in other sports also, do you think that will be enough to force the change?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. You have to go with the bad news story. It has to be a bit extremist or alarmist. The fact that we called for a ban makes great people like yourselves go, I need to talk about this and think about this. And actually, some of the kind of core principles under it, we all agree on. And, we want the game to be safer. We don't want people to be forced. We want better coaches. But I think, the bit on dementia we've seen from football and heading, as soon as you start to recognise that this is a problem, we'll see changes to the game. And, the removal of training and heading in football for under-11s in England, Northern Ireland and Scotland has already happened. So I think there will be changes ahead. I think my encouragement to rugby is we can either get ahead of it or the parents, society will make those decisions for you. Do you want to be in the driving seat or do you want to be forced and told what to do by politicians, parents, schools? So I think it's a choice for everybody in rugby to go, do we want to grab this by the horns and really, control this, or do we want to wait until everybody just opts out? And that would be a really sad day for all of us, I think.
In your eyes, from your learned experience, is rugby doing enough just now?
No, I don't think. I think rugby's doing stuff, and I'm really encouraged that they are doing things. But we can see from the trends of data that concussions are going up in the professional game, the community game, the youth game. This is even after they've put in place head case training, concussion training, the Activate program, which looks at trying to strengthen some of the muscles to prevent concussions. But the data is showing that concussions are on the rise, injuries are on the rise. So we've got to do something more. And actually, when we're looking at things like dementia or CTE or other conditions, the only known way of preventing or stopping this at the moment is reducing exposure. And in the youth game, that looks at how do we potentially delay when they start tackling. Do they need to do it at 9? Could we do it at 11? That saves 2 years. We know that there's a 30% increased risk of dementia every year of participation of contact sport. So we just need to start looking at how do we reduce some of these exposures to contacts. And I guess that's the same in the professional game. It'd be great to hear your views, Jamie, maybe on, you know, how much contact you do between games each week. Should we be looking at reducing that bone-on-bone training and protecting your brains as well? Because I'm sure you're worried about some of this stuff in years to come.
Yeah, we definitely are. I think it's... first of all, I definitely agree with a lot of what you're saying, and I think it's great that we're talking about it. With regards to bone-on-bone training, those conversations are happening a lot. I sit on boards with the RPA, and that's a constant conversation that is being had. I think probably a few years ago now, that was, you know, coaches would probably get quite defensive and say, well, you can't tell me what I can and can't do. I do think that coaches now have a much better understanding of concussion as a whole and how much that an influence bone-on-bone training has on, you know, the potential of getting concussion. There is still a long way to go with it. And I do think that there do need to be sort of restrictions in place, but it is pretty hard to do it. And I think you'd be surprised at how little bone-on-bone training there is in between big games anyway. Because, you know, when you're playing test match rugby, when you're playing premiership rugby week in, week out, it's, you know, you probably do a one live scrum session, a live maul session, and actually everything else is sort of what we call, I don't know what you call it, Sean, like square touch, body in front. Very little bone on bone. You know, touch wood, you see very little concussions off from that kind of training. And maybe the younger game can learn from that and sort of train in the same way. Because I know when I was a kid, I was doing contact training Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and I loved every, and I'm playing on a Saturday, and I loved every second of it. That was why I wanted to go. But actually, maybe can we restrict that and learn a bit more about different ways of training that don't require contact, whilst at the same time being able to play the, you know, train in an appropriate way.
But Jamie, when you were doing that contact training when you were younger, how much of that though is actually learning your skill? Because tackling the correct way is a skill. And if you limit that, then do you actually limit your skill set?
Well, I'm very much on the case that education is the key, especially when you're first coming into the game. And I was very lucky that I played at a club and had a coach early on, and my dad was involved in it as well, who knew the game, that, you know, focused very much on the technique of tackling and how to tackle. And, you know, I was really lucky in that respect. And I think that that's got to be a priority, you know, for club rugby. If it gets taken out of PE, I think, you know, if people go and do their qualifications, those are the sort of things that, you know, level one RFU courses, they're being spoken about constantly. And it's probably the right way of going about things.
I think that's the biggest thing for me, the coaching of
yeah,
and who's over these things. Like, Adam, I listened to your TEDx talk as well, and you said like the 3/5 of all coaches had no qualifications, none whatsoever. And like and out of all the students that was surveyed in that, like 10% had concussions. So I know it's not a massive number, but it's not a number we want to see either. But out of that, like, let's say if you don't have coaches with qualifications, if you don't have people that know what they're trying to teach, it's very hard to limit in the game of rugby. The game of rugby is a contact sport. We fire ourselves at people's legs. But again, just on Jamie's point, there's certain, and Lee, you asked the question about technique and coaching that. You coach that, me coaching young fellas at home, I coach them on their knees first and people walking by them. So there's stages you can coach, but I've been taught that, for instance. So these coaches in schools at the minute, they might know what to do. They're just saying, oh, run at him, run straight into him. Or they mightn't be telling them to go either side. They mightn't be telling them to put their head in the right place or the right shoulder or wrapping your arms, etc. So I think all this, we're all on the one page with it, but it's the education part of it, I think, that the RFU or the different unions have to do something about it and get good people involved and that understand the game and understand how to coach the fundamentals of it, because tackling is a fundamental of rugby. And I think if we do that, we'll see a dramatic decrease in head injuries, in people getting hurt, in any case. Like when I go to tackle Jamie, he's a barrel of a man, as you can see. And
I'll run over you as well.
He's not the easiest to wrap your arms around because he's
right. He's, yeah, there's no reason. There's no explanation. He did carry on with the with your point, please.
But like it is something that's different people. Like you look at a Billy Vunipola, you can't hit him in the chest, for instance. You have to hit his legs because he's so big. And at that, it's even hard enough to get them down. So it's all about different techniques. And you learn them. We've learned them because we're professionals. But the grassroots of the game has to be coached from day one by people who know what they're doing.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think, you know, that getting people to understand and do those qualifications and really understand, you know, how to coach tackling effectively is really important. You know, and there's been great strides in the professional game around, you know, what tackles are most dangerous. And I'm sure you guys have done loads of training on this over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years particularly. But that needs to filter down. And I think, you know, as Jamie said, there isn't so much exposure to bone-on-bone training now, particularly in the season. But does that translate to the school game, the community game, or are coaches still, you know, hammering these 16, 17-year-old kids every, you know, twice a week before a game? When actually it's not necessary, it's not required. And, you know, if we take a third of those out, one session a week out, that lowers the risk by a third. You know, that's massive in terms of protecting your brain and potentially stopping, you know, young people we're talking about. Sometimes 18-year-olds are starting to be diagnosed with CTE, which is a form of dementia. People don't get dementia at 18. So it's a huge concern. And I think, you know, the voices that you're putting to this are really important and powerful. So thank you guys for doing it.
Adam, thank you so much for your time. I'm hugely relieved that we all leave as friends because
that went a lot better than I thought it was going to go.
This is squaring up to be like a big domestic, but thank you so much. It is a really serious topic, and I'm so glad that we could give it a really good and interesting discussion. So thanks so much.
No, thanks, Adam.
Cheers,
thanks,
Adam.
Cheers, mate.
Really interesting to hear from Dr. Adam White there. Now, before we go, Jamie, what is happening at Saracens? Give us a picture of your day training season, all of it.
Season, we don't know too much about. I think everything's going ahead as planned so far. Our day, so the international lads have been sort of integrated back in and they're sort of training up. We are training on a relatively different schedule, a bit of a pre-season vibe. It's the first time I'm doing pre-season in winter and snowed this morning in our run. Usually wearing a vest. But I was wrapped up. It was, so we're doing that. And then the rest of the boys are flying into it, really. We're preparing. We've got, they've created a cup competition, I think, sort of as a bit of a pre-season thing that I think it's called the Trail Finders Cup. So it's with us, Ealing, Coventry and Doncaster, I think, and so that starts in a couple of weeks, so we'll be taking part in that. There's, you know, big trophy to win, and then we head into the championship, really. So all eyes is on that at the minute, and you know, the boys are training hard. It's been an interesting time for us because obviously with a lot of guys going away on loan, plus you take the international guys out of it, the Barbarians guys out of it, you know, there's a pretty young group there, but at the same time, by all accounts, it's gone really well, and great to sort of see what those younger guys have got. And it's going to be great when the international boys come back in and see what they're like when Owen's shouting at them.
So will you actually play a game of rugby before England-Scotland?
I don't think so. So it's sort of dependent on us. Eddie's happy for us to sort of not play. His big thing is just making sure that we come back into camp in good shape. So that is my intention, Sean, before you talk about anything, just put your smugness away. That's my main focus at the minute. We're trying to get ourselves back into some sort of running shape that we're ready to sort of get back into test match rugby, really. And you can replicate it. Sean, you know well, Phil Morrow's taking our sessions, yeah, and the Butcher, he's unbelievable. So, we're pretty confident that we're going to be back in good shape. But at the same time, I think Billy Vunipola, he prefers to play. He gets fitter playing. He hates running. So that's completely reasonable. And then, you know, there are only two fit hookers at Saracens at the minute. So if I'm needed, I'll play in a couple of those games as well.
So heading into an international match, and you did it, you know, I suppose for the Autumn Nations Cup as well. Do you need to be battle ready? Do you need to be sort of at that match spec in terms of taking on opposition? Or is that by the time you get to your stage, just you know what you're doing anyway?
Yeah, I think you can draw on experience, but at the same time, I think, you know, there's definitely an increase in your body, in how fit you are aerobically with test match rugby. So, you know, there is an element of that. But at the same time, the fact that we're almost training separately at the minute allows us to get that running capacity in at an intensity that we probably wouldn't be able to do otherwise. On top of that, we're going to be training, you know, with the group and, you know, if needed, be playing a couple of those games so we can... You know, we're not going to be missing out on the rugby experience, but I'd say that's probably the last thing we need.
If needed is his favourite word at the minute.
If needed, mate. If required, I'm ready.
If required.
Yeah.
Now, before we finish this off, I feel actually a little bit bad. I feel like we've just basically spent about the last 50 minutes pissing Jamie off. But I'm not saying this is definitely going to piss you off, but... Since Exeter did the double, Rob Baxter, OBE, Joe Simmons, MBE, did you Sarri's boys get any awards when you were winning?
No, we didn't. No. Jeez. I don't really know what to say about this because for me, like, you know, I think winning a domestic double, I'm not going to bag... either of those guys. I've got a huge amount of respect for both of those guys. And actually, do you know what? Winning a double is rare and, you know, fair play. But, you know, I think for, you know, it's sometimes, you know, when, for example, we did it twice, you know, we did the double twice in whatever it was. And
I think what you're trying to say is that maybe it's easier for me to say it because it's something that's a bit strange for a player to talk about that's in, like, someone who could potentially be in an England setup in the next year or two too. It's probably something that you don't really want as a player.
I'd say that it's interesting that that Joe is giving that, but at the same time he captained them to a European double. It doesn't add up that one team can do it 1 year and then another team does it twice and they don't get anything. I'm not taking away from what either of them have done. I think what Rob Baxter's done for rugby in the Southwest is absolutely unbelievable. I've got a huge amount of respect for them both. But, you know, Mark McCall sat there with nothing, you know, and say what you like about the salary cap. They wouldn't have been getting MBEs if they had just won the Premiership. There's no salary cap in Europe. They got it for winning Europe. And we did that however many times. And, you know, I just think that, you know, Mark deserves something. Brad Barrett deserves something. You know, you look at it further, you know, Eddie Jones deserves something. You know, you look at the England footballers, they got stuff for getting to the World Cup semi-final. We got to the World Cup final.
Where does it stop? That's what I
that's
say.
This is the thing, you know, you see it both ways. You can't hand it out to everyone.
Exactly. You're a sportsman at the end of the day. You're a sports coach. That's your job to get teams to win and to perform as a player. Yeah. So you're not like... I suppose you nearly think, geez, are they handing these things out willy-nilly now?
I don't know. Yeah.
But like, it's not. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying I remember watching Rob Baxter play and what he's built now in Exeter, like, is nothing short of phenomenal.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. And Joe, like, leading the boys to doing that double. But, like, where do you stop? Like, you could pick out every club in the last 10 years that have won something and say, well, those two lads deserve it, or... You know,
I'd back them to do it again.
Yeah.
You know, do you know what I mean? And then where do you go? Do you give Baxter a knighthood? This is the
Make him king.
Make him the king, yeah. He's already the king of the Southwest, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the king of the Southwest. Gents, thank you very much. It's been lively. We'll go with lively. Good luck, Sean, if you get a match this weekend. Fingers crossed that you do.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck, Sean.
Thanks, Jamie.
I'll be nice to you. Yeah, it'd be nice to get a nice reply once.
Yeah, no, I wish you all the best with your holidays over the next few months. Yes. And enjoy yourself and just don't eat too many.
Great to see you again. Thank you, mate. Thank you.
We'll do coffee
someday. I'm going to wrap this up now. I'm going to mute you both, starting with you, Sean. Thank you very much to everybody at home for watching, for listening, and we'll see you on House of Rugby next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The House of Rugby, Season 3, on Joe.